This session is brought to you by Zone 14 Coaching, a company built by coaches for coaches. If you ever walked off the pitch after training and thought, did this session actually land the way I wanted it to? This is exactly what Zone 14 was built to help with. Their next-gen journals help coaches plan sessions for their players, reflect on what worked, and track development throughout the season. It's a powerful resource built around intentional coaching, backed by neuroscience, designed to bring real structure to the training process. You can check them out at zone14coaching.com and use the code CBTP for 20% off. And if you are a coach or a club and want everyone working from the same system, reach out through their website to learn more about team and club discounts.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. If you caught part one, we laid the foundation. We talked through Aaron Medina's journey and philosophy behind Alpha Forms residency. In this episode, we go deeper into what this actually looks like day to day, how the schedule works, how development is structured, and what the environment really means for players and families. Let's start this chat and head to the pitch. Now, with this, what is a traditional day like? Because we completely skipped over that earlier, and I never got a chance to go into it, because this will actually help break down the train of thought that we might be missing here.
Yeah, so like 8 to 10 a.m., they're on the fields. 10 to 2, they're in the classroom, basically with lunch. And then 2 to 4, they're back on the fields again. And a lot of the kids actually don't even train in the evenings at all. Some do. But a lot of the kids don't, depending on the team that they play for and the arrangement that they have with their coaches, or they'll mix in once a week as opposed to 3 times a week, or 2 times a week as opposed to 3 or 4 times a week, depending on the level. And so the coach knows that they're getting those reps. And so they're able to create balance in terms of what their schedule is going to be. On certain days, they do strength and conditioning, which I think is really important for kids of their age. So starting 7th and older, I think we miss that. And that's why we see a lot of injuries, career-ending injuries sometimes, ACLs, like you name it, because the kids are not getting that time, or they don't have the time because they're in a traditional school and then they go to team training, right? So when are you going to get athletic performance? When are you going to get strength and conditioning? How can you balance your body? So they're getting that during the day, which I think is extremely valuable. And then they're also, which I don't think people focus on enough, but getting the recovery piece. the Normatec, the red light, the cold pools, the everything that you need to do to keep your body performing at a high level. Those are all the pieces that create that holistic development. Whereas I think sometimes we focus just on this piece, which is soccer, instead of all the pieces that go around it. So yeah, that's a typical day.
You talked about the recovery and everything. So if they don't feel like coming on Monday or whatever the case may be, they aren't falling behind at schooling. Now, some schools have different philosophies. Like Mondays are normally always recovery day. It'll be like a film day. They might not touch the ball as much as normally. Tuesday will be more of a strength and conditioning than with a little bit of ball in there. Do you do all those things throughout the week? Is there a set like table for athletes to go through within the program? You talked about all the recovery and all the strength and conditioning, but is there a cycle with it? Because as a parent looking at this, I get not, your kid might not be up to it if they just played cross country in ECNL, got back late Sunday night, and they're exhausted. Now they're coming into training, coming into school the next day. Is there a cycle within the pattern throughout a season? That might be the better way of putting it, because I think we have our off-season and on-season training for school. Is it year-round? Is it just the traditional school year? Like, how does this, in my mind, you'd have a break, you'd have the summer off from it for a couple of months, and you kick back into it in a couple of weeks, or 6 weeks, 8 weeks later, you go back to the normal school calendar, and you're back at the school. But is there a regiment that's there? So if you Monday's this, Tuesday's that, I'll let you fill in the rest. If there's an actual program.
Yeah, no, there's so much science behind everything that happens within the program. So I will give you an example. Like even every formation or setup of cones has a meaning for the players. So if there's three in a triangle, the players know cognitively that this is what I need to do in this moment. And what it allows them to do is it links their brain to their body, and it allows them in a game to do the same thing where they can be looking up, but they know that they have this tool that they've done over and over again. And so there's so much science behind how the kids move, how they start, what they're doing, even just on a daily basis. And again, I said it, and this is honest, and I'll probably get in trouble for it. When I was at Sting, one of the biggest things that I said is we got to figure out what they're doing over there, because you can't tell me that it doesn't work. Now it needs to translate to a larger game, meaning as the kids progress through the older ages, that they've never really had the chance to show what they could do in the older ages on the club side. But what we've seen is on the individual development side, they've got some of the top kids in the country, in the youth national team, at top clubs. There's no question of that. They're kids that are hallmark names. So you know that like the science behind the soccer makes sense. Now the weekly schedule, Mondays, yeah, a little bit lighter. They do strength and conditioning typically on Mondays or Tuesdays. On Fridays, all they do is recovery. So their whole morning session to get them ready for the weekend, they're in where the Cowboys go in the whirlpools, and they're there and they're getting their bodies ready for what they have ahead. And so, yeah, the cadence of what the week looks like, of course, you load as heavy as you can towards the middle of the week, because you know that we've got a taper and we've got to have that bell curve that goes through the week. And so in terms of what they're doing, those are on the older ones. On the littles, they can handle a little bit more and handle it in terms of their bodies are more elastic and they're like little rubber bands at that age. And so really it's just more of what we're seeing through a week with them and adjusting the training, because they don't do the recovery piece in the young ones. So sixth grade and younger right now, they're in Plex in Melissa. So they don't do necessarily the recovery stuff, but they do it on their own and they have the time to do it on their own in the evening. So like Sunday, I trained for 4 hours, different age group trainings, and Bellows, one of our great little 2015s, comes up to me and she's getting her snack afterwards. And I'm like, what do you got going tonight? And she's like, I'm gonna watch a SpongeBob movie and take an ice bath. But for a kid that's 10 to know that's what she needs to do for her body is important, but they have time. because they're not doing all day and all night.
I think that's a huge difference. I think there is a moment when kids realize, like, they need a break. I can only relate to my own kids and kids that I've gone through it that I've talked to. And that being something, I look at my 12-year-old. He has asked to go to a soccer school since he's probably been six. Like, he realized he didn't want to go to a traditional school because he would rather play soccer all day. And there are pros. He gets to do band, which is, and gets to participate in, like, yearbook and things like that and be exposed to different things. And he would miss out on those things. But honestly, it comes back to the kid. I think if the opportunity arises, I think he would have been gone in a heartbeat. Like, I honestly, as a family, he has a say in it because it's his part of his future and the things he would be missing out on. But my daughter, on the other hand, I think he would do it, but I think he'd be sad to leave. Where my daughter would be happy to skip school, mm-hmm. skip the drama at the school, and do her activities all day long with schooling mixed in.
Yeah.
Because to her, schooling's not a social time. It is, I'm required to be here and I'm required to do all this stuff. And she's eight, and I think she's learning a little bit more about who she is as an individual. But as a parent, like you said, it's not for every kid. It's not for every athlete. And I think it goes sport to sport even. It's different.
I think too, for the younger ones, I think that's like the most exciting space. The older ones, as they get into ECNL, we know we've got that covered. Like, you're at the Star Center, you're training along with professional athletes. You have all the trainers that train some of the best athletes in the world. You've got all the recovery stuff. You've got your online school component. Like, I don't, as somebody who's, this is what you want to do, now you have a full circle approach there. For the littles, where I see the opportunity is just like, I'll give you an example. I trained a kid on Saturday. She literally jumped on my back and we did a piggyback for a picture at the end of the training session. They did their trial day this week and they committed. And you know what the mom said? She's, Jagger is literally going to absolutely break down and cry when she gets the acceptance letter because she wants this. She didn't want it. She is totally fine with leaving her friends at school. She knows that she's going to see them at different times, but all day, every day, what she wants to do is do this. And even like your son saying that he would miss different things, totally get it. Cause my daughter would be the same, right? There'd be pieces like he's 12, she's 13. So as they get older, it's harder, but at some point you have to make a choice too. And I remember this when I made the national team at 14. Now my friends weren't happy with me because I was never able to go do movies or go do anything like that. I was always working. But that was my choice because it was something that I saw a larger, it was my goal. And not a lot of kids that are their age also understand that. So then you get them around like-minded kids, and now at least they got their crew of people that know exactly what we're all going for.
I think, how to describe it? When you have kids that perform at a high level, their friends that they have become part of that environment they're in. And the social psychology side of it, I don't think kids miss out on things. We as a society, and this is my opinion, the pressure on missing these things.
Yeah.
Missing going to prom, missing going to these things. I think Christian Pulisic is a prime example of this. I think there's a story of him coming back to the States, playing the youth national team, and going to a prom back at home with friends that he grew up with. But he had to be back within 36 hours, something silly. And so he flew back from Germany to go play with the national team. I think he was like 17, 18 years old. I remember hearing the story. And he flew back to Pennsylvania to be with his friends for 24 hours to go to a prom.
Yep.
And he didn't miss it. And he wasn't even in the country. It was just the friends he grew up with having, he was still in communication with. And I think that is something that falls back to the parents as a responsibility, not so much the kid, is making sure that they develop those friendships and learn how to foster that love, not just of the game, but with people and the people around them. And we always joke, we always know who your friends are when you change teams.
No question.
And it's the ones that you stay in contact with. It's the ones that you're always talking to. And even though the badge may change on the jersey, the friendship shouldn't. And when you play against kids that you've known. My son knows kids from camps and everything else. They're fierce little combatants on the field, and they go head to head and they don't back down. And then they get off the field and they have their arms around each other no matter the score of the game, and smiling and laughing. And they realize that's just part of the environment. And talking to the parents, like, we have a friend, their son's a keeper, and they know Landon likes to shoot. And they go, we hope Landon shoots, but we're also hoping their son blocks the goals. I mean, it's a two-way street. And I think that is what in the soccer community when it's healthy. And I think we don't lose the aspect when they go into these programs. It's up to us as parents to help navigate it with them.
And I think, like you said it yourself, like, your son identifies way more with his teammates on his team. My daughter, she would choose to go hang out with her teammates any day over anybody at school, because those are just the connections that you kind of develop. And so then if you take, not only do they have their team relationships, but then they've got a school relationship with like-minded kids, that's pretty powerful for them, because nobody understands it. I missed my prom. I didn't get to go, but it was a sacrifice I chose to make because I wanted to play at a higher level. And there's not all kids that necessarily understand that. And I think for us, it's just creating the options, and then parents choose their options, just like the club game. Like, I talked to a parent the other day. I'm like, listen, like, it's our job to keep you. And you know what? If what we're providing you is not something you feel like is best for your kid, then you have to choose what's best for your kiddo. There's a lot of options out there. But it's the same on the school side. Traditional model, Montessori method, public school, private school, soccer school, specialty school, AI school. There's so many different options out there. You got to find the secret sauce for what makes sense for your kiddos.
I agree. So you talk about it, and you talked about it with your daughter, and it triggered again. And I wrote it down, and I didn't go back to it. Matt Montaigne, when I interviewed him, he talks about having his keeper union. And, like, they're all these keepers that train together, and they all know each other, and they're really good friends. And so he was telling me a story when these two keepers were playing each other, and the keeper on the other team got injured. She sprinted from her goal to the other end and beat everyone there because of the friendship was greater than the game.
Yeah.
And because the bond that they have. And I think having these residency programs can create those bonds with these players. And I think you talked about it there. It's like these kids rather hang out with their teammates, even though they're on different teams and different.
Yeah.
They are their friends. They are their families. And I think that's what some parents need to understand, that, yes, the game is the center point, but the bond, the connections, and everything that orbits the game.
I think that's why we put our kids in youth sports, right? Like, it is to teach them to be good humans. It's to give them the opportunity to really, I don't even know what you would call it, just experience different environments. So for me, the big thing is, listen, yeah, we all want to win. We all want to do well against each other. But I do want my daughter to run up to the serve goalkeeper at the end of the game and give her a hug. The kids that she's had the experience of being with through different clubs in the market through ID2 and the Youth National Team Market Training Centers, like, I asked her, I was like, how are those connections? She's like, we got a big old group chat that we talk. And so that is part of the experience, because we know that they're not always going to play. To me, that's the biggest thing too, is creating those positive connections, irrespective of how competitive the game is. I know two little girls that are like the best of friends, and they play on two top teams that compete with each other pretty much every day and weekend. But they also have sleepovers and are in each other's backyards. And that, to me, those are, the soccer connection is a bigger piece than maybe those individual competitive things. But I do think you get the best of both worlds when you combine the school environment with what they have with the club, because now they double their network with like-minded kids. They've got everybody who they're with all day. Those are their people. And I know that when they see each other on the fields, they support each other. And then they have their team. But it's all kids that are geared towards the same thing. And I think even though the public school or private school experience in a larger sense provides many other different benefits. And so again, it's trade-offs. It's really what's right for your kiddo.
So as a parent,
yeah,
we're talking about what's right for our kiddos. What should we expect from communication to feedback to review? How's the education set up? Is it through an online schooling program? Is it through educators that are actually on campus? How's it set up?
So sixth grade and younger is all teacher-led instruction, meaning that like it's certified teachers certified to teach in those age groups and those subjects that are literally very much like a public school environment or a private school environment, interacting with the kids on a daily basis. And so first through sixth is set up where it is completely like you would have traditional schooling. We just do more and less time, and we don't do things like art. We do Spanish, but we don't do some of those extras, because if parents really feel strongly about those extras, they could pursue them when they're not on the fields at night. So that's first through sixth. Seventh through 12th is all online schooling, but there is what we call a proctor or a mentor that's in the classroom the entire time. And I watched it the other day, I was laughing, because they basically just walk around. And they're certified teachers too, but they're more there to facilitate the learning process in an online capacity as opposed to giving like a lesson for everybody. And the reason that's powerful is because these kids can choose from, like, when I saw the course list, I was like, oh my gosh, because they can actually choose what outside of the core subjects, what is meaningful for them, what they want to learn about. It also allows them to work ahead in the curriculum on the online level. So they can, we have several kids that are getting college coursework credit in high school. We have several middle schoolers that are working into the high school curriculum already in certain subjects, not all of them. Everything's tracked. Everything's reportable. A parent could log in a day and see exactly what the kid has done. The curriculum for their subjects is laid out through an entire semester, an entire year, depending on what the subject is. And they have certain benchmarks and dates that they've got to meet certain things. And then, of course, we map test the kids so we can see which map testing is private school, not private school, but standardized testing that allows us to see how they're growing and how they're performing in certain subjects. And so all of it follows the TEKS in terms of the Texas State curriculum, meaning that say 2 months down the road, this experience is not right for Aaron. I just can't, maybe I'm too tired. Maybe it's just not for me. Then I would integrate seamlessly back into the public school system. So it all follows all the Texas State curriculum standards. And we're one of the few programs locally that are accredited through Cognia. And that accreditation process is not easy. It's in-person observation, curriculum standards, ongoing performance reviews. And so it really is what I feel like is a great way to move the kids forward educationally. And then because we have the smaller classroom sizes, I do feel like it's a lot more efficient, especially in the younger ages, because they're not 1 to 25. They may be 1 to 12, 1 to 13, 1 to 14. And that really helps a kid in a younger age develop a lot quicker than they maybe could when, if they had a deficiency or they're in a larger class size, that the teacher might be missing them a little bit.
I do understand what you're saying. So it's a lot. It is a lot. I have a question just because I am dyslexic. So how do you handle kids like me? At the end of the day, I grew up in New York State, and I'm very thankful for that because of the programs they have set aside with kids that have learning disabilities or learning needs even.
Yeah.
Do you guys have anything like that to help kids that would fall like I would have, that without the help that I got in high school, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. I will give full credit for what they did for me in New York State and high school education really did set me off for the rest of my life.
Yeah. So successful. Every player that we come in has to do an academic evaluation along with a soccer evaluation. The reason that's important is we have to understand if we can really do right by them in terms of their academic evaluation. And so we are very forward with the families in terms of saying, hey, like a lot of these kids have an IEP that outlines exactly what interventions they might need. And so for us, it's about, okay, we feel like we can accommodate these things. Okay. But if it's speech, if it's a certain larger learning deficit, then we're honest with the parent in terms of saying, hey, listen, like they can come in, but these are the outside interventions that they're going to need in the evenings, like speech therapy or some of those different things to get them caught up. Now, a lot of those kids, because they struggle in a larger learning atmosphere, they get pulled out maybe an hour a day. Whereas like these kids, because they're in a smaller learning environment, they're getting a lot more individual attention. But we evaluate every kid individually, and then we let them know whether we feel like we can accommodate them. Going into next year, we are looking at, so the second session of the day from 2 to 4. So the kids are 8 to 10 on the fields, 2 to 4, right? We're looking at bringing in somebody who specializes in some of that curriculum, because there's a specific, and I don't have it off the top of my head, but there's specific programs that are offered through the public school system that would allow us to implement that on a more private basis, just to help out more kiddos that maybe we wouldn't be able to accept initially. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so we're looking into all those things now, but a lot of our teachers, we do have kids that have dyslexia in the program that are thriving simply because they're getting that more individual instruction. Their parents do pursue, whether it be speech therapy or different things that we can't help. We can do the accommodations. We can do all that stuff. But we don't necessarily right now have the opportunity to say, hey, we've got this full program in place. And ultimately, the education side is so important. So we want to make sure that we're doing right by every kid that we have come in. So they come in and they do a full academic evaluation before we speak to the parent to know if that's something that they would, that it would be a fit or that they could be accepted into the school.
It's amazing because at the end of the day, I am dyslexic. And mm-hmm. But at the same time, smaller class size rooms do help kids with disability. And I also think it helps kids that don't, because at the end of the day, they get to have more focus on them to help them. So what is the average class size then? Or is it variant based on age and grade?
It varies based on age and grade. We're not, I believe we were looking at like a ratio of 1 to 15, 1 to 20 that we would not go above going into next year. Right now, the average class size, because we have the kids split, so we have 4 dedicated teachers just in 1st through 6th. So if you think about how they move through their day, like they're getting a lot of individual attention, and we're under 1 through 15 and the younger. And then the olders is a different situation, right? Because they're all in one classroom. So you have your proctors or your mentors that are moving around, making sure the kids are moving through their curriculum. And there's 22 kids in that classroom at this particular point.
And will you go higher with that? Because I know that a lot of it is self, if they're doing more of an online training, I'm assuming that's what you guys are doing. I haven't got into that. I don't think you've mentioned it. If you have, and I'm sorry, and I missed it. Is it more of an online training than fully through, you said, I know you said you're accredited through, I can't remember, I didn't write it
down. Ognia, yeah.
And yeah. Then you're accredited through them. Is this affiliated with other programs within the state of Texas? Like you could take college programs, courses, or advanced classes at their own pace? Or is it, like sometimes some homeschooling is done through colleges here in Texas. So who is your, I shouldn't call it homeschooling, I'll rephrase that, unschooling.
Yeah.
Through a college or whoever it may be.
We've worked really hard to create like the best online school system. So like anybody who comes through and does like a tour or a trial, always happy to have the teacher sit down and show them the program firsthand. Typically, when you're looking at like an academic program, teachers utilize multiple curriculum services. Ours is through one where they'll pull all their classes. It creates the tracking. It is truly an online program. They log in every day. They have their assignments. They have their benchmarks. They have where they are in each subject. Then they choose, okay, I'm gonna go ahead and tackle social studies first. And they go through, they do their lesson, they do their assignments. It's tracked so that the parents can see it. It aligns with all the Texas state standards. We have one kid that was like, and it was so funny, I just walked in and our proctor is, no, you can't watch a movie. And he's, but I'm 2 weeks ahead in school, like in every single subject. And she's, but you're still in school. Keep working ahead. So it's more like in the 7th through 12th, it's way more individualized learning. And it's all online. They log in, they've got their program, they choose their classes, and then they can work ahead. We do have some that are behind. That's just the reality. And we have to stay on them and say, hey, you need to get to this point by this point, or these things can't happen. But I don't want to share the exact name of it.
You're fine with that. No, I was just curious because yeah. I know that there's a lot of there's a lot of programs across the United States that partner with colleges and partners with, I'm trying to think of the other word, even high schools in the community or school districts to do their education because it's just easier that way.
So, for instance, like next year, Frisco has a completely free program that we could utilize where our kids could log in and do all online school through Frisco ISD. But we choose this program because there is so much curriculum differentiation in terms of what the kids can choose. And just because the tracking and the visibility piece is really important to make sure that they're doing what they need to be doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then in the youngers, it's all TEKS. The teacher uses multiple curriculum sources, and that's typical of younger age groups, but it's all complete in-person instruction.
Okay. I'm going to shift gears a little bit here because we've talked about the education and it deals directly with education. What type of culture that you are trying to build within the residency program? Just like every soccer team, I think culture is the foundation of everything. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's a six-year-old team or a U18 team. Culture is the foundation to me as a parent, because without a good culture, everything else crumbles.
Yeah.
From training sessions to how kids pull information out. So is there anything out there that you can talk about the culture that you're building within the school district, the residency program, to help parents better understand that the environment that their players will be in?
Yeah, I think it's very family oriented. I think Forms is like that way anyways. Like I laugh because like even going out to the academy sessions, like a parent's bringing out three kids to training and the little ones are on the field running around in their leggings and tank tops. The other ones are training when you know them all because you've trained them all. So I think Forms itself is very family oriented. That's, I think, the biggest thing coming into it that I honestly take away from it is it's a lot of people who care a lot about all the people and they all know each other. And so in the school side, what I see is those little kiddos love each other. We do have that very close, tight-knit environment, but I also see them like really identify with their coaches and their mentors, their teachers. They love their teachers coming in. The coaches have such a great rapport with them. They know everything down to the Band-Aid on the knee of what's happened. And I think kids appreciate that. I'm brand new coming into this whole thing, right? And I walk in, and this little girl comes and runs into my arms, gives me this huge hug. And as I was dressed up because I had business meetings, she's like, "Oh my God, you look so nice and you smell so good." And she just gave me like the biggest hug. And then she walked away and I looked at Coach Anna, who's one of the residency coaches. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I just met her once. And she started laughing because I did. I met the kid on the weekend. That idea, I think, is what I would say is central. And then also creating an environment where kids know that it's a privilege in the residency to be a part of that. It's also a privilege to wear the name, because what the name means is that you're going to be a step better than everyone else, is what we hope. And so having that responsibility of when we show up to training, we're ready, we're going to work hard, we're going to push each other, but we're also family at the end of the day. And they're very collaborative with how they roster. And I think that promotes that family environment along with how they move the staff through the teams. So all the kids know all the coaches. So I think they've done a really good job to create that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Looking at this from a little bit expanding beyond, do you see them expanding in more areas of the DFW Metroplex, or this being more of a model that they have of the come in? I always joke, you don't want to put other programs down. You want to be the envy of everyone else. I don't want to be the best. I want to be the envy.
Yeah.
Because if you're the envy, that means you're doing something right and you're being helpful. So what is like the long-term goal with Alpha Forms Residency Program?
I think with the residency, it's just exploring what opportunities there are available to expand, or providing like transportation type services so that it's not, as a parent, sometimes you just can't make the logistics work. You want it for your kid, but you can't get them there. And so if we're out of the Star and we're out of Melissa, having maybe those options to be able to bring kids in to the school, I think, is the first, or looking at expanding into other areas within DFW that makes sense based on where we feel like we're going to draw the most kiddos in terms of a tuition base and being able to get a viable school put in place. So I think it's both.
That's awesome. With that being said, you talked about transportation. I'm in Keller. Are you looking at Frisco Star is about a 45-minute to an hour drive in the morning during rush hour traffic. No experience driving out that way during the summer at all or anything for camps. Are you looking at, because that's why I was asking, because I look at it from my perspective. There's everything for me right now is more than a 30-minute plus drive for most of the programs. I think there's one program in Southlake that's only, I think it's like a 17-minute drive from my house, 18-minute mm-hmm. drive. So that's why I was asking you if you're looking at expanding more, because as a parent on this side of town, there's only one option. There's two in the south. I'm sorry, two in the south and a few more other places.
Yeah, and there's not that many. That's the reality. It's a fairly new concept. So having kids have access to that, I think, is extremely important. So yeah, I think the transportation piece we'll definitely be looking at going into next year. I do think that expanding into other areas, I don't think that's on the table for next year because there's so much work that needs to be done. Just in terms of expanding our current footprint where we are in the residency, but also in the academy. Now, on the academy side, in terms of the youth soccer market, I do believe that if you can secure, even if it's the size of a 7v7 field in certain areas and you make it convenient for parents to get out there, that you can really help expand the club profile without a lot of fixed costs because you're not building a building. It's not a school. It's a field that you need to put equipment on and create a partnership with different organizations to create the field. And so I think on the youth academy side, we would look at facilities expansion more quickly than we would look at it on the residency side initially. But looking at how can we provide access to our program for kids that might just not be able to get there. And in terms of the residency side, I think that's something that is a powerful thing. In my previous experience with the school that I started was we had 15 passenger vans and the kids are being bused in from many different locations. And that was a powerful thing for parents. No question. Okay. Let me grab a sip of water.
No, you're good. I understand how that goes. I forgot my water in the other room and I've been in a meeting since 9 o'clock this morning. I'll make sure I get everything going through all my questions.
Yeah, no worries.
I'm going to ask this. I don't know if you want to answer it for yourself or for the school, but do you feel, let me start off, with the youth soccer environment that we currently have set up in the United States, the club formats and everything else, what would you see with the residency programs being the future? Do you see this being more and more likely because this is how the rest of the world's doing it and there's more programs allowing kids to do it because it releases the social, not the social, but the economics relief off the families to be able to do programs like this? Do you see this happening more and more because of?
I think you've already seen it. Like Forms was one of the original residency programs. And now we've seen many pop up over time. Not many, but some in this market. And I think people recognize that for kids that are like really geared towards doing something like this, that they want to be able, I see it in my son. In 6 months, he's gotten so much better than he has in such a long time. I won't give the time frame, but because he's just touching the ball a whole lot more. But he's happier. He's healthier. He's thriving. He's engaged. He's got his buddies. Yeah, it's a smaller social circle that he has. But I mean, that's not a bad thing. So I think anytime you see, I think the soccer world's so small. It is. Everybody knows everyone. And so when you get one child who has an experience here, who talks to the next, and their parents talk to the next parent and the next parent, then you're going to start to see like the demand for this grow a little bit more. Do I think that we need to think outside the box in terms of the club soccer market? For sure. I think that we need to try to extend what we're doing on the youth side beyond just what we have locally here. And so being able to have our kids attend Vegas Cup or Surf or Jefferson Cup and compete against some of those other youth clubs that are not in our market. I think that's important because I do think it gets mundane, always playing the same teams every single weekend in the same divisions and in the same league. So I think there's a lot of creative things that we can do for our kiddos, whether it be on the youth academy side or whether it be within the school.
Okay. Is there anything that we have missed today that you would like to bring up? Because I know we covered a lot of different things and I don't want to make sure we don't miss anything, and making sure that we can continue this conversation if we need to. But if not, I'll wrap it up with my last couple of questions I have for you.
Yeah, I think there's one thing that I think is really important, whether you're considering something for your child as they're getting into soccer or they're playing soccer, is truly trying to make the decision that makes the most sense for them on the club side, right? And I believe not necessarily in the loyalty aspect to any one club, because I think what's more important is you choosing what's right for your child. And it's the club's responsibility to show them that you should want them. Does that make sense? We have to do right by your kid. It's your child. Now, on the residency side, with the TIFA funds, really, like, everybody talks about those. And I think, if I'm honest, it's such an unknown this year that I don't think, like, anybody can rely on those, but they're coming up. And so if anybody really wanted to look at that for their kiddo, they need to explore it with whatever accredited institution, you know, they want, so that, because nobody knows. And then going into next year, we're going to have a much better idea of how they're allocated, amount of funding available, what the percentage chance is that you would get them. And we can really find ways to make sure the program is accessible for kids that maybe would never have access to the program. That's important for me. And on the residency side, we have a foundation that we started, and we're looking at private funding into that foundation because the funding is unknown. And so if you really want this for your kid, can you imagine taking your child to a trial day with us and they have the best day of their life and they're like, man, I want this. I want to be here. And then you can't give them the opportunity. Nobody wants to be able to tell their kid that they can't have access to their dream. And so for us, there's a huge private funding initiative so that we can make sure that our kids, whoever's deserving of the opportunity and really wants it, that we can really support that process. And then the other thing that I would say to any parent, just like I said on the youth side, you got to make the choice that's right for your kiddo. It's our job to keep you and to show you that we're going to do right by your child. It's the same thing on the school side. So the biggest thing on the residency is parents need to tour. And then parents need to have their kid try it because we do that through the week because we want to make sure that parents have that level of comfort, that this is something that's different than what most people are used to. They need to know socially it makes sense. They need to know academically it makes sense. And they need to know that their kiddo is really going to want to do this. So those are the big things for me, is like everything's about choice. And whoever you're considering, they need to show you that you should be their choice.
I like that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask my last favorite question, and you can answer however you want. So as a player, it's a 3-prong question, or maybe a 4-prong question, depending on how we look at it. As a player, who is the greatest influence on you? So this can be one person or multiple people. I'm going to put it back to how you got into coaching before you got there, the marketing, the business side of things, because it ties into today. Who has been the greatest influence on you to achieve those goals, to achieve that spot? Who has been the greatest influence on you as a coach? And into your role today, who has been the greatest influence on you? And it can be multiple different people for each one. Who's been the greatest influence on you to be who you are today and the position you're in today?
Okay, so player first, 2-prong. I'll never forget it when I was playing the Canadian. It's actually in the picture behind me, by the way. I'm playing Mia Hamm in that picture there. She was one of the players of the 94 World Cup that, like, as I was growing up, like, really just, number one, she was out there. So, like, we knew her. And she was, like, one of the first, like, females that was actually out there. Like, out there marketing, a great player, great, like, pedigree. So, like, in terms of a women's soccer player, she was one of them. The other's Martha, which, this is a funny story, you'll laugh. But when I was at SMU, in a spring game they brought in Brazil. We played them. I was playing right back, which I'm not a defender. She did a rainbow over my head in front of an entire stadium of fans and made me look completely silly. But I'll never forget that because I know like the light that she's brought to the game. So for me, those are like players that I really resonate with on the female side. On like the men's game, Zidane played a similar position to him, played like the 10 or the 9 or the 7, just depending on where I was. But he just always played with such a flair and such a like consistency. Pele as one of the greats and looking at like the way that they played over time. So those are some of the people that I think back. I was like a massive Man U fan when I was like young. So like Cantona, Giggs, like all those players that came up in the old school Man U days, players that I identify with a lot. The biggest player I think I would say that I identify with is my best friend, Mel. And so she's in Florida. And I'll never forget it. And I think it's important because I think that this is what we need to teach our kids, right? And yes, we have all these professional players that we see, but it's like, how do we treat each other, right? And so I came from a team to a new team, and she was on the new team. And I had never, ever met one single one of those kids, but I'd played against them. I'd scored a lot of goals against them. They didn't like me. So I show up to my new team. And nobody would pass the ball with me. And you know what she did? She got her ball. She pulled me to the side. She said, hey, you want to pass? And I think that kind of lesson is like what we need to teach our kids. We can see everything on YouTube and all the stuff, but just be good in the moment to the people that are around you because you never know how they're going to impact your life. And to this day, we laugh, but like I call her my sister from another mother because we have been so close from the very moment that happened. So if she's going to be like my favorite most player, she's probably there. In terms of the business side of everything, God, that's tough because I've learned a lot from a lot of different people. And so I would say that's not necessarily any one person. I think it's more of a mesh of my collective experience. I would say this, it's not the easiest. It's a male-dominated industry. And so to be female in this industry and be in leadership positions, you have to have a pretty hard mind for it. Typically, when I walk in a conference room and I'm giving a presentation, I'm the only female that's in there. And so I think that all the people, whether it be the owner of Sting, whether it be my investor in the private school that I opened, whether it be collaborating now with Ron, that like you take your shared business experience and you really build on that to help make you successful that way. I will say I had a professor at SMU, Ed Fox, that he really influenced my like early business mind. And so I think he's probably one of them that I would credit to just setting me up for success on the business side. Okay, last one, what was it?
You and your current role.
Okay, me and my current role. So again, I do feel like this is like the perfect storm. I think I didn't know what I was gonna be getting into coming into this. I knew that I liked, and I've always had a really great relationship with Ron. I didn't really know too much else. He's been my single point of contact. Coming into it, man, there are so many people that are just invested. He's in Madrid with his son. He's starting a division there. His wife is there with him. We have admins that seriously never stop. We're on WhatsApp all the time, messaging and working, and those are the kind of people and when you have a team of people that care that much, I feel like that's what helps make things go. You can't just have one, not any one person can do it all. And so having that team, I'm really excited about. The coaching staff, I think, are tremendous. They love the kids love them. What more do you want? And then the last thing that I would say is just the ability to combine with a soccer mind that's different than my own. I think that creates something powerful.
This conversation with Aaron across these two episodes really pulls back the curtains on what youth soccer development can look like and maybe something different way to think about it. We talk about the journey, the structure, the science behind training, the balance between school and soccer, and most importantly, the idea that development isn't just about teams, leagues, or results. It's about the individual player. And I think the biggest takeaway here is there's no one path for every kid. But what really matters is finding the right environment, the right balance, the right decisions that truly serve the player long term, not what looks good in the moment. Rather, it's a traditional school, a club environment, or something different like a residency program. The goal stays the same. Support the player, support the person, and keep the love of the game alive. A big thanks for Erin for joining me and sharing her perspective.
If you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.